Hello, podcast listeners. We know podcasts are a great way to catch up on a program that you may have missed on KSJE, and it's provided as a free service of this radio station. But you know, KSJE is now listener-supported, and so while you enjoy this podcast, we hope that you'll also take some time to join KSJE. Become a member today. It's quite easy to do. Just go to our website at ksje.com/support and pick the level of support that best matches your budget. Thanks again for listening. Here's your podcast.
Welcome back to Right on Four Corners. I'm your host, Delcherie Gladden, I'm a USA Today bestselling author of over 30 published novels and a ninth grade English teacher. And I'm also fighting a cold or something, so I sound a little froggy, and I apologize for that. On this week's episode, I have Misty Pulsifer, and she's going to be talking about the main book that I got to read was Mansfield, but she writes Austen retellings. So we're going to be discussing that and that process. Misty, go ahead and introduce yourself.
So I'm Misty Pulsifer. As you said, I work full-time as a counselor for my church, so that's what I do when I'm not writing. I'm originally from Utah, but I've moved all around. My family's lived in California, Maryland, New Mexico is where we are now, and Utah, so we've kind of moved all around. I've always written, but I started writing Jane Austen retellings. My son, who's now almost 17, was a baby, so probably a good 15, 16 years ago. And it's just kind of evolved into what it is now.
We'll just kind of dive in. There's a lot that we can talk about. But I wanted to start with the book that I had the opportunity to read was Mansfield. And This was one I actually had never read Austen's book on this. Uh-huh. So I was like, wait, which one is this? So that was kind of fun because I think I've read just about everything else. But this was neat to look it up and kind of see what the original book was about and then look at your version of it. So this retelling, whether fairy tales or folklores or a well-known author like Jane Austen, is a popular genre. How do you approach it? Because I feel like everybody takes a different style or different way of looking at doing retellings. Sometimes people just put it into the modern times, but keep the majority of the story in place, or maybe, you know, twist it into something new, take it in a different direction, different ending, that sort of thing. So tell us a little bit about what the original story is and how you adapted it or changed it to make it your own.
Okay. So first of all, one of the reasons I chose Mansfield Park is because it's not as well known. My first one was Pride and Prejudice that I did, and that's everybody knows that's been redone so many times, both on the screen and now that the public domain has opened on her stuff, also, you know, retellings and literature. And so one of the things I loved about Mansfield Park was it was not as well known. I feel like I like to keep major plot points of hers, but definitely want it to feel like it's my own. So one of the main differences, I guess, is Fanny Price is who she is in Jane Austen's version. She is Edmund's cousin. And so she does get sent to live with his family because her family can't afford her anymore. They did that back then. Weird. We'd never really do that today, but they gave kids away all the time. So that's kind of what happened. So technically, they're cousins. And in today's world, that doesn't work. Obviously, first cousins. So one of the biggest challenges was coming up with, you know, how can these two grow up together, but not be blood relatives? And how does that seem realistic? So that was kind of what I did with that. One of the biggest challenges for adapting Austen to current times is the technology. We rely on technology heavily, right? We're always texting, doing all the things. And so back in Jane Austen's time, they wrote letters or they showed up at the door, and that's kind of how people communicated. And so it's been a challenge bringing that in, but it's also allowed me to do some other things with it that she didn't have access to back then. The other thing that's pretty difficult adapting is that in Jane Austen's time, people were either in the trade class or they were a gentleman, so they didn't work. They just had an estate and they sat around all day and did embroidery. It's been a challenge to try and incorporate livelihood into my stories and make those also seem realistic without it taking over like it takes over our lives today, our work.
That's definitely a hard one to balance in real life. but yeah, also in fiction, I think in a lot of genres where it's not mystery or detective, where the job is a major factor of the story. It's like with a lot of other things, real life stuff gets in the way. Like, how do we not have to, you know, be at work and things like that? Yeah. And that is an interesting challenge that you bring up of such a different type of society.
One of my characters is a teacher like you, right? So I did a summer book and that meant she was off for the summer. So that one worked, but I can't make everyone a teacher. So
true. You got to keep the variety going. But I want to dig into a few of those that you mentioned a little bit more. But first, since Mansfield Park is one of the less well-known Austen novels, give our listeners just a brief overview of the storyline so they kind of know what we're talking about once we get into it.
Jane Austen's storyline, right? Her original?
Yeah, and then we'll talk about a little, we'll dive into a little bit more some of the the changes.
Okay, awesome. Yeah, so Mansfield Park is actually my favorite one of hers, and that's odd because, again, it's not that well known, but Fanny Price is a little girl that grows up in a home with lots of kids. They're poor. Dad is always drinking, and he pretends like he's a gentleman with that work, but he's actually not. So he's just doesn't support his family. So Fanny Price's mother is, her two sisters live on an estate, and one of them married better, quote unquote, for money. And Fanny Price's parents married for love, quote unquote, again, love. And so, you know, they decide to take, the sisters decide to take Fanny off of their hands because they have so many kids, they can't afford everybody. So she comes to Mansfield Park as like a 9, 10-year-old, something like that. And it's very cold and imposing. The Bertrams, who are her aunt and uncle, have two older girls of their own. They're very kind of snooty and whispering about her and all the things when she gets there. And it's completely different from home, what she's used to. And so Edmund is the older cousin, and he's the one who befriends her. And they become really close, best friends. And of course, Fanny is in love with him for her whole life. He doesn't realize that at first. So that's kind of the beginning of it. And then there's a brother and sister who move in next to the Bertram estate. And Edmund falls in love with this very eyelashy, she knows what she's doing, knows how to flirt kind of situation. And poor Fanny has to watch that. And meanwhile, there's kind of shenanigans going on between the other two Bertram girls. So the stepsisters, for all intents and purposes, are cousins, I guess. So it kind of goes through that. And it's really, as you see her, she's basically treated as the helpmate except for Edmund. So when this new brother and sister come into the story, it kind of turns everything topsy-turvy. She does end up going back to her parents' home at one point and sees that, wow, I really don't fit in here. I have been raised in luxury, really, since she went to her aunt and uncle. Even though she's treated as a kind of the help, she still can't fit back into that life with her parents. And so things happen, and eventually the brother and sister kind of get tangled up and get caught doing some things, and Edmund comes to his senses, and I don't know if you want me ruining the ending, but it's a good ending for Fanny and Edmund.
Yeah, we'll let readers discover that part of it on their own.
Yes.
But yeah, so let's talk about some of the adjustments and changes that you made going through and in writing Mansfield. Obviously, it's more in the present day, and we're adapting to what life is like in today's world, which is not, you know, like you said, you know, just being ladies and gentlemen. That's not a profession anymore for most of us, I guess. So with yours, you turn the concept of the estate of Mansfield into an actual park where people come and stay. It's near Yellowstone. And the family runs the park. They have cabins that they rent out and trail rides and that sort of thing. Tell me about your development of that setting and where the similarities were for making a lot of the elements of the original story work in this modern setting.
Yeah, so I think one of the main things I tried to preserve was there's a lot of horse riding in Mansfield Park, and specifically, Fanny has her horse that Edmund actually purchased for her when they were younger. And it's like her, her best friend, and she and Edmund go riding a lot together. So I knew I wanted to base it around equine things in some way. And Yellowstone is a place that's open year round, even though they have, a lot more traffic, obviously, in the summer and things like that. But there's a lot of dude ranches and trails and things like that. And so I don't know, for me, it just kind of was a perfect place. It's out of the way. Not everybody's been there, but everyone knows of it. And so turning it into kind of like a dude ranch a little bit, like renting out the cabins, was my way of trying to make it more realistic as far as like this is their livelihood. They can't just sit around and play poker and do the things all day. That was my way of trying to make it feel more realistic in our timeline.
One of the other things that I think this setting provided was a really good, realistic way to bring in the brother and sister characters. Because that's
Right.
something today, like, I mean, occasionally you may have a relative who needs to stay with you for a little bit, but like that was much more common to just go spend a month or two at a friend's house or, just go live with someone temporarily. Like, we don't really do that
Right.
today. That would be
No.
an odd thing to just, have someone come into your life and stay for a couple months. I liked that adaptation of this was a completely realistic way, this traveling wealthy brother and sister who are out just kind of
Yeah.
adventuring pick this spot. Like,
And from Europe,
yeah.
from Europe, people do travel from all over the world to go to Yellowstone and a lot of other places here in the US, but that in particular is pretty realistic.
Absolutely. And it gave you this way to make them exotic characters who could come in and kind of just bowl everybody over with their charm.
Right. I feel like making them French was kind of a personal choice because I speak French, and so that's just something that I have knowledge about, and I could bring that in. And when I pictured the character, see, in Austin's, her name is just Mary Crawford. I think everybody was named Mary, first of all. There's one in each Austin novel. So I'm like, I cannot use that name. I've got to change it. I just really pictured her as this like overly perfumed French little doll, that like overdoes everything. And so it kind of just fit for me that she was French.
Yeah, you have Edmund, who's kind of recently back from college in your version, and struggling with trying to keep his distance from Annika because he believes, his family won't be accepting of that, and there's the age difference there. He's about 5 years older, right?
Yeah, I think five or six, something like that.
I liked that you have this exotic character who comes in, and it's meant to be for a limited time. She's going to be there over the summer, and he sees this as an opportunity of like, oh, okay, this is a good distraction. I can keep my distance, but he seems like he's kind of isolated himself from dating, from really immersing himself in some of those young, early 20s kind of activities. And it doesn't go quite how he planned as far as that, which was another part I wanted to talk to you of developing characters. You're starting with the base characters from Austin, but you're also adding to, taking away, adjusting to develop characters that work in your version of the story. So what was that like? What was that process? Because I think Edmund especially is an interesting one because you're trying to balance his youth and some of that, like he's kind of starstruck and gets in a little over his head, but he also has this very mature, caring side of him and his desire to protect and take care of Annika. So tell me a little bit more about how you worked from the characters in Austin and then adapted them to your story.
The way I get to know my characters is by free writing. A lot of times, writing the scenes, I get to know them, but there's times when I'm a good bit into a book and I feel like I don't know who my character is, and that's a problem. Obviously, when you're trying to write, I try to write very personal. Like, I want my readers to be in the feelings with my characters. And so something that I do sometimes is just like some journal entries that that character might write, or some way to get to know them myself, which I don't know, may kind of sound funny. But I knew that I wanted him to be, an upstanding guy, but he's also, 20 something years old. And I wasn't really sure if that would come across realistic as him, not doing all the things that a typical college guy would do. But, for him, it was kind of that, like you said, the nurturing side. For her, I really put a lot of myself into Annie as a character, mostly like past childhood stuff, background. And so I didn't feel like I had to get to know her because she was already me a lot of it, except I'm a little more feisty than she was. Yeah, so the characters, I like to take Austin's base character and some of the elements. Like Edmund was kind of really clueless in Mansfield Park. He didn't even realize that he had feelings for Fanny. And so, but I didn't like that about the character, that he was oblivious. Like, can we root for somebody who's stupid? I don't know. I want them to be human and I want them to be flawed and I don't want them to be perfect, but I also don't want them to be ridiculous, I guess. And Austin was really good at writing ridiculous, but so that we loved it, that was one
Yes.
of her talents, was ridiculous. So
That's a good way of describing some of the characters. But yeah,
like
you
over the
still
top
adore.
ridiculous, Yeah.
Well, and I kind of wonder sometimes, I was like, did they seem more normal in like her own time when she's
In
writing
her
and they
time.
just seem more ridiculous to us now? It's
Right.
hard to tell. It seems like such a weird society that, I don't know, hard for me to comprehend what that was really like to live in that society, but
Right.
who
Yeah, I
knows?
agree. I would like, there's like Austin parks that you can go to for the day. Like, I don't know if you've read Austin Land by Shannon Hale, but it's all about that. It's like a place you check into and it's all Austin themed and it's fiction, but they're supposed to give you the Austin experience. So I think there are those places out there in the world. I think it'd be very interesting to go. We'd probably get really bored really quickly without our phones, I would imagine.
Probably that is probably the biggest challenge of that existence for us, like to go back to and being like, we don't have any of the things that keep us on track or entertain us. Like, what do we do?
Yeah, we wouldn't know what to do with ourselves, and they wouldn't know what to do here. They'd be like, "Where's my embroidery? I don't like all this."
Yeah, it's hard to
So.
imagine. That would be completely overwhelming going from Austin area society in the Regency period to today and just
Right.
being inundated with everything all at once.
The chaos. I agree. We might not want to come back if we went and visited, Regency England. I don't know.
That's very possible. I'd be like, oh my gosh, this is what life used to be like. It's so calm and relaxing.
Right. But then we'd probably need to use the bathroom and we'd be like, nope, we're going back to the 21st century with indoor plumbing.
Yeah, that's one. I'm like, real glad we have that. Proper heating too. Oh. Well, let's talk a little bit more about that technology side of it. 'Cause that is something I was thinking about when you mentioned that, thinking to some of the other Austin stories, and that lack of contact plays a big part in several of her books, where I'm trying to remember what scene it was, but in Pride and Prejudice, at one point, the sister gets sick and they're like, oh, well, it's too far to ride back on horse. You should just stay here for a couple of weeks. And it's like,
Right,
now it just,
which
that'd
would
be
not happen.
ridiculous. Be like, oh, she
Right.
caught a cold. We're just going to keep her at our house for the next week. Be like,
Right.
what? Give me my kid back.
I agree. It's different. It definitely poses just a challenge, and especially in the relationship development between the characters, right? I mean, take Pride and Prejudice, for example. There's lots of like romantic tension when their eyes lock across the ballroom and they haven't talked in how long. Like, we don't get that because we text, let's be honest. or we call or whatever. And so it does, to be realistically modern, it has to be in there somewhere. But I try to use it to, I don't know, enhance the relationship arc or things like that. But it's a challenge for sure.
Well, and there's certain elements where, because you have Edmund's been off at college at the beginning of the book. He comes home early, to be able to participate in Annie's graduation and be there to support her. And like, we do get the sense that, yeah, there's been texting back and forth, like they've stayed in contact, but for two people who are as close as they are, like it's just not
Right.
quite the same. And I did like that element of they're in contact, because it would have been unrealistic for, you know, in today's world, right, to be like, oh, you left for college. Oh, we'll see you again in 4 months. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Only getting that time. So yeah, they are in contact, mm-hmm. but you built this really close relationship where texting, calls here and there when they had time, like, it's not enough, and it's not mm-hmm. the same connection that they're used to. So there is this longing between them, even with Edmund, who, you know, isn't quite to the point of being able to understand the depth of his feelings and the direction he wants to take it. He still misses her presence and needs to be near her and make sure she's okay and be involved in her life. And I thought that was a good adaptation of dealing with, yes, we have the technology to stay in contact today, mm-hmm. but for this particular couple, like, it was reasonable that that wouldn't be sufficient, that there would still be that deep sense of missing and wanting to be back in the physical presence of the other person.
Yeah. Well, thank you. I tried.
You did a lot of things that I really enjoyed the change that you made.
Okay.
Because you did stick, you stayed pretty close to the original storyline as far as, like you said, like mm-hmm. the major story points. Glad you changed that they weren't first cousins. That's kind of a weird one to do today.
If you've got like a flowers in the attic vibe going, but yeah, I was like, ew. It's too icky. I can't.
Yeah, it's like, no, let's just stay away from that one. It was really neat to see your take on it and how you adapted elements of the characters, like Edmund not being quite so, you know, head in the clouds about everything. Mm-hmm. He still had that youngish, you know, 20 something year old guys, they girls too, but he's swayed and a little bit mm-hmm. off in la la land in ways that it's like, I could see a early 20s something doing that.
Right. Yeah. I mean, awkward, right? Like, let's face it, sometimes we just don't have the social skills today.
Yeah.
Because of technology, right? So yeah. I don't know, maybe he's a late bloomer a little bit, I guess, is kind of how I saw that.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think the closeness of the relationship you built between Edmund and Annie, he really, I think, kind of shut out a lot of those other social aspects, because he was mm-hmm. so focused on taking care of her and being there for her and overly investing in that mm-hmm. relationship to the point of, you know, nobody else really occupied that much space in his mind, which you saw in some of his mannerisms and his lack of thought in certain areas of like, oh, wait, like, yeah, that was a hurtful thing to do. Like, he didn't think about it mm-hmm. in the moment.
Right.
Because he hasn't had that practice of being in other relationships and realizing how much something little, like at one point in the book, he takes the girlfriend, the summer girlfriend,
Marcella.
Yes, up to a loft area that's special between him and Annie. Yes. And he's kind of, you know, doesn't think about it in the moment. He's showing her mm-hmm. around and they're going and, you know, visiting different places and mm-hmm. things like that, where it's like in his mind, in the moment, he's with Marcella or he's with mm-hmm. another family member or something. And he doesn't think through how much of an impact that's going to have on someone else. And I thought that did show that isolation socially.
Right. Yeah. I mean, he is very focused on her. You know, I think I wrote something like, as a kid, he was just, you know, he got to be like a caretaker because he technically was the baby brother of, you know, the two, not the youngest kid in the family, but his sisters were, you know, pretty independent and kind of just had their own little clique. And so for him, it was an opportunity to take care of somebody. And of course, for Annie, like, he's her whole entire world completely. And so, yeah, I kind of liked the dynamic of, we've grown up together, so it's almost like a forbidden love, but it's not actually forbidden again because they're not family. I don't know, that kind of dynamic really appeals to me. Like, we know each other inside and out, but now we're falling in love and it's new and all the things. So,
yeah. Well, and that itself, you know, presents some unusual relationship challenges mm-hmm. where they have grown up together. They do know each other on a certain level extremely mm-hmm. well, But that kind of complicates actually taking those steps into a romantic relationship because they have so much history together. You know, so much of their experiences, especially from Amy's point of view, you know, there's special places, there's special traditions, there's, you know, songs, there's little things that they have so much history built into that she has a really hard time seeing outside of that. And that causes some problems with just the relationship. Dealing with some of those feelings that she's never had to deal with before and then figuring out who she is as an individual because she spent so much time being Edmund and Annie. And that's that's a really hard thing to navigate.
And that's, you know, that's the reason she goes home kind of again is because an opportunity comes up and she... This may be, I don't know, too personal, but I lived with different people growing up when my mom wasn't in the picture. And so going home was like this huge thing of like, oh, I got to go be back home with my family. Like, I don't have to feel like an intruder here. I don't have to feel like I'm, this is the family that I live with, but I'm not part of the family. And so for her to want to feel that again, and then of course she gets home and she feels nothing like that because her family is even worse, you know, than they were when she was there, except for, of course, her sister, who she is able to renew that relationship with.
Well, I'm just looking at the clock and realized we're already just about out of time. So
time flies.
We had all kinds of other lots more questions, but we'll leave those for future readers to dive into as they hopefully go check out the book. But I did want to ask, you know, I know you're busy with your counseling and family and everything else, but I wanted to ask before we wrap up, do you have projects that you're working on right now, or are you taking a bit of a break?
So I am. I published Mansfield in 2016, and at the time I was in school, and since then I've, you know, finished a master's degree, and so I remember, you know, graduating like, I guess, 3 years ago from school and going, I can't wait to write for fun again. And here I am. I do have something in the works, but it's like excruciating trying to to finish it just because now that I work full time and it's a very emotionally taxing job that I have, it's hard to come home from work and then work again and put that emotion into my characters. But I do have something that I'm working on and it's going to be released next summer. And it is another Austen retelling. Again, one that people don't really know.
Keep me in the loop. I'd be happy to have you back and talk more about that when you're ready. In the meantime, where can people find you and keep an eye on the progress and when the new book's going to be
out? So I do have an author page on Facebook. It's just like author Misty Dawn Pulsifer or something like that. I think that's, I guess I should know exactly right. But that's where I typically post when something's going to be released. My books are all available on Amazon in paperback and ebook. So if you go to Amazon and just type in Misty Dawn Pulsifer, it should bring my books up like right away. That's my full name. So my parents are hippies and I get a lot of questions about my name as far as, you know, are you a stripper, things like that. But the real reason is my parents were hippies. So I personally have never stripped. Now they were likely high when they named me. So it's possible. But anyway, that got off the rails there. But they are available on Amazon if you search up my name. So. Yeah.
As I've learned, unique names make it easy to, you know, get your social media in order and easy for people to find you.
That's true. Well, thank you so much. I really enjoyed talking with you and being able to talk about this. It's kind of motivating me to write some more. So that's good.
Well, good. Well, I'm being able to read more and meet more authors has been helping me try to get back into writing, too. I kind of took a break while I was in school and all over doing crazy stuff. So yeah, this has been great and hopefully we both get some writing done and I'll look forward to hearing more about your project next summer. But thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me and come on the show this week.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. Best of luck.
Thank you.
Did you enjoy that podcast? We hope that you did. And if you did, share it with your friends. And if you really want to keep podcasts like this coming, please support KSJE. You can do it easily online at ksje.com.